It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hey, it's Ken Bergen here from Hospo Reset, and today I'm talking to Matt Lucas. He's a coffee peddler and a coffee fanatic and a bike rider and does all sorts of interesting things. I've known Matt for about two or three years, and just really been impressed by how he not only follows trends, but being in a regional area has just kind of, kept ahead of what's happening. COVID, of course, being one of those things, but he's been hit by bushfires and all sorts of other things as well. Anyway, I'll let him tell the story. Matt, great to talk to you today.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. Thanks for the invitation.
Great. So, I mean, I know where you are between Sydney and Melbourne on the freeway, but you might want to just tell people where you're located if they're not
learning. Yeah, sure. Yes, so I'm located in the Snow Mountains town of Tumut, which is on the western side of the Snow Mountains. And it's about 70 k's directly west of Canberra, but pretty much equidistant between Sydney and Melbourne.
Nice. So small town, you've got Tumut and there's Gundagai is your other business.
Gundagai is the other location, that's correct, yeah.
Okay, so small towns, I guess the, you know, being a city person, I always think small towns, no coffee or nothing I want to drink, but you've established a pretty formidable reputation for that. Just tell us about your cafe, history when you started and all of that.
Yeah, sure. So Tumut's 6,500 people and Gundagai is about 2,500 people. So, yeah, really quite small towns. And, yeah, my family, my wife and I, we did a tree change in 2017 to Tumut where I originally grew up. So it was sort of moving home for us. And we started the coffee peddler in October 2017, which was, you know, our first venture into hospitality, but certainly not our first business. We've basically been self-employed since we were 23, and my wife and I have worked together over that whole time in different businesses. So it wasn't anything sort of really too new for us, but we, the business starting the coffee peddler in Tumut, the business basically began trading above our expectations immediately. And 8 months later, we added in the cafe in Gundagai. And then about 18 months after that.
So it was an empty shop or?
It was a failing cafe that the person there, they wanted out. So we were able to take over that lease and there was a bit of a fit out there. So we were able to establish basically foothold into that market for not too much because like the kitchen and all the rest was sort of all still there. So that was pretty easy for us to simply take over that lease and allow that person to exit, rebrand, reconfigure the shop a little bit and away we went. So, and then I
had to throw out a bit of equipment and all sorts of stuff that looked like it might be useful.
I'm probably pretty bad at hoarding equipment. So I've actually still got the old Wega or whatever it's called. Coffee machine that was there, the 15 amp one, but we quickly replaced that with Victoria Arduino Black Eagle that went into the store there. Once we sort of had that up and running, then we got the coffee van in as well. But one of the things that was really surprising to us, like moving home to Tumut, we thought that the business was just going to be my wife and I and maybe a couple of people because we'd gone and, you know, I'd done my SWOT analysis with my business plan and gone around to all the other hospitality venues and looked at what were they running, how many staff did they have, what size business were they, and it was basically thought, just my wife and I and two staff, that's all it would be. But I just counted up this morning and we've currently got 32 staff members.
Wow, awesome. Okay, so there's that kind of interesting and exciting problem of early growth, isn't there? Growing out of equipment that you thought would be sufficient and
essentially, yeah, like particularly in the kitchen side of things. So we use Pablo and Rusty coffee. They're the roastery that we buy our coffee from, and they were actually really good straight up. So we've had really high end commercial coffee machines from the get go, but certainly the kitchen, the initial kitchen fit out in Tumut was very much inadequate, and it's a bit of a legacy that we're sort of working through at the moment. We've now moved premises, so we've actually bought a building in Gundagai, which was an existing hospitality venue but wasn't trading at the time. So we've just moved down the street and into that. We've gone from basically 10 internal seats that we had at the other venue to 40 internal seats. And about 50 on the footpath. Mm. So we've pretty much tripled our size in Gundagai. But a lot of things that I learned, I've been able to basically include with the fit out there.
Things that you did, you know, now that you've got the luxury of doing it properly from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Don't buy crap equipment.
Okay.
You know, like,
how do you know if it's crap? Just because it's cheap?
Like being an accountant, like I have an accounting background. And so, you know, initially we were concerned about how much money we were going to invest and all the rest. And also weren't expecting that the business was going to have the turnover that it has. And as a result, we went in a bit cheap here in Tumut to start off with and quickly basically broke most of the equipment because it got used way more than what we were expecting it to be used. But now, you know, the chefs in Gundagai, they love the kitchen. They love the layout. We've invested in, you know, really decent equipment there. And look, we've got the luxury now that we've also got the turnover to support doing that. Initially, we didn't know. And we see many hospitality venues that fail within, you know, 18 or 24 months, they've invested heavily and possibly even, you know, lumbered themselves with a lot of debt. You know, from your background, I guess, in Silver Chef, you know, you would have seen that there are people that just, you know, they went and had the wish list and they picked it all and it's all great and looks all good if everything goes to plan. But, you know, we do have the underlying business there, certainly.
So tell us about the kitchen. What's some of the really good stuff you've invested in now? You can give us brands or, you know, sizes of things. Is Gundagai now your production kitchen for both places or do you do?
It's about to become. Yeah, like it's, we haven't gone like any sort of super high-end stuff, but it's just decent commercial equipment, like proper big flat tops, yeah, decent commercial ovens. I think we've got a couple of turbofan ovens now because we make everything as well. Being in the country, we can't buy anything. So everything has to be made from scratch. Mm-hmm. We're certainly very much aware of that we can't buy in our cakes. And so we're having to do everything. We cook all of our own meats. You know, we don't sort of leave anything up to anybody else. So, you know, having all that there, we sort of, you know, is actually much better now, all the commercial grade stuff.
Good capacity refrigeration too, I guess.
So now we've got, in addition to commercial fridges, we've also got a cool room in the new venue as well. So that's allowing us, because we only get one fresh fruit and veggie delivery per week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got to be pretty much
like kind of taking a gasp of gas.
Yeah, like that. And that's the thing. And we only have basically two suppliers as well. So there's not a lot of competition price wise for us as well. So we're very limited on that thing. But we try to work in with the suppliers as much as we can. But the refrigeration is really important so we can get the maximum life out of the items that we can. We simply can't ring up someone today and go, can we get it? Can we get it, you know, later on today or tomorrow morning? It's not a case. We've got to have our ordering in much better.
I was actually watching a video about a chef who works in Antarctica. So you think you've got problems.
Wow. Yeah, that's a bit more of a logistic issue for us. Yeah.
6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also obviously then with our coffee deliveries, we're once a week as well, but we do try to split that. So what we'll do is like, order early in the week for Tumut, and then we'll order later in the week for Gundagai. So if one store is perhaps running out of something, we can add that into the order and then transfer it across to the other store.
Tell us about your coffee equipment. You mentioned the Black Eagle. I know this is one of your questions. What other supporting items are you doing? You're on the same machine in both venues?
Yeah, that's a really important thing, that we're running the same machinery across both venues, because our baristas do travel between the two venues, and we want to have a flexible workforce that is trained. So they can basically front up into whatever store. It'll be, the workflow is the same. It might be a different direction, left to right or right to left, but it's the same workflow, the same procedures. The point of sale is the same. Everything's very much, you know, done exactly the same there. So, yeah, lost me there a bit. Yep.
The point.
Did you want me to go over that one again?
Yeah.
Where did you lose it? Was it?
You were just about to say the point of sale.
Okay. Yeah. So everything's the same across both venues, the point of sale, all the work procedures, and that goes for both kitchen, barista, and front of house staff. We want the staff to be, you know, flexible, because you might have an event, say, like we just had, Just hold on 1 second, just make sure my phone's not connecting up to a random Wi-Fi. No, it's okay. So the all staff need to be able to go between both venues, because we might have an event in one town or something that's going to increase the requirement for staffing at one of the venues. So we need to be able to transfer staff one way or the other.
Yeah. So you've got the coffee machines. What are the tell us about the grinders and
press
and
dispensers and the whole lot. Yeah. Like we're as automated basically as we possibly can be. Like particularly our Gundagai venue, it's got the latest and greatest that we can. So we're running actually now a Slayer steam LP machines in both venues. That's taken the espresso to the next level. It's really, really good quality, developing the flavors a lot more. We're using pre-infusion to really soften the shot a lot of the time and just allow the coffee to really shine through, which is great. From there, we're now using, down in Gundagai, we've got the Melkonig E63S. Grind by weight. So it actually dispenses by weight, because we weigh every single shot in regardless of the venue and what grinder. But having a grinder that's actually dispensing by weight is just improved our speed dramatically. And that.
What about yield? Has that made a difference, do you think? Or was it pretty accurate before?
Look, it was pretty good. And we were using a spoon. So I was spooning in and out. So you might maybe waste one shot over the day. It's not significant. But we're finding that because the grinder is working, because that grinder is actually feeding two machines. So we've got on one side, we've got the Slayer LP. On the other side, we've got a refurbished three-group Black Eagle.
So you need that sort of volume at times, do you?
100%, yeah. During those peak times,
I'm thinking
on weekends,
2,500 people. You got to tell us where everyone else is coming from.
So there's 9,000 vehicles a day pass by on the Hume Highway.
Okay,
and we're trying our best to get as many of them into the town as possible. Yeah, okay. So we do have peak times, you know, and our goal is to, like with the two group Black Eagle that we had in Gundagai, we were maxing it out doing, you know, 500 to 600 coffees a day there. And so we need that extra firepower to limit the time. Yeah, because we're mindful that people are traveling, they don't want to wait.
Yeah.
It's sort of like in the city. Yeah, people don't want to wait, because if they have to wait, they just walk across the road to the next place.
And you can kind of tell, even as you look through the window, whether a place is going to be fast or slow, can't you? You just get a sense of it.
Yeah, exactly. And so we keep statistics on the baristas, and we're just about to
As in the productivity, their product,
yes.
Personal productivity.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. So we can see how quickly they're bumping things off.
Say the slowest of the group, good person, but a bit slow. How do you bring their speed up?
Work with them on their workflows, ensuring that they don't have any excess hand movements, that they're multitasking, that they're not. Oh, we lost you again. To improve someone's productivity, are you there, Ken? To improve someone's productivity, we basically just work with them, making sure that they're multitasking, that they're not simply standing there holding a jug the whole time, they're hanging jugs. We've got Uber Milk installed as well. So one of the things that we've found...
How long have you had Uber Milk and why did you go with that system?
We were using Barissima initially and the guys there were like super helpful, but unfortunately the machine just wasn't consistent enough for us. Uber Milk, after talking to a couple of places in Sydney CBD that were, they'd had Uber Milk for 3-4 years, said it was super consistent. Mm-hmm. It was a proven volume machine. And that was the thing with the Barissima that perhaps it was developed in Europe where they probably don't do the volume of milk that we're doing. Yeah, and so that was the real key for us. That the
interesting
Uber Milk.
European appliances, I mean, they're used to different kind of gas, with lower calorie gas and different heat for cooking and lots of things.
When we were working with them, they were really they were looking at what we were doing in a daytime. The Barissima guys back in Europe, I think they're both Austrian and German based. And they were shocked at the amount of milk that was being put through the system and said it was not, they hadn't really designed for that. So they were having some issues there. But I noticed that they've come out with a new machine. I really hope that they do well because the local reps were fantastic to deal with here and the customer service was great. But for us with the Uber Milk, it had been tried and tested in the marketplace. So we we went with that. And as a result, hasn't missed a beat since we've installed them.
So you don't use a tamper, you just do that.
We've got puck press. No, look, if there's a gadget there,
what else is on the list? Yeah. Is there another gadget you've eyeing wistfully that already
is? If you think about where we're at with our coffee now, so if you've got like grind by weight, puck press, Slayer LP, and then we're basically as automated as what we can get. But then, and one thing that, I'm really keen on is robotics and investigating that. How can we actually introduce robotics into hospitality whereby the barista is still in control of the process, but the repeatable task of one of the other thing I haven't got yet is Quin Spin, and I want a Quin Spin, which is that don't have to knock anymore. Okay. You pop it on top, it rotates with both a metal and then a brush. Cleans it out for you. It cleans it out much better. You haven't got the hitting of the instrument. Yeah, and that's one thing where the robotic, from the robot side of things, that will be integral
so
to
when
to
I look, you know,
that.
I'm a bit kind of interested in robotics and I watch all the YouTube videos.
Yeah, me too.
I guess it's, one of the things I see is what I'd call the third arm, drops fryers, chips into fryers or does, is that the kind of thing you're looking at or is it a machine like a big one at McDonald's that kind of does everything all in one box?
I really think that if we think about, what's the investment that hospitality places have made in their equipment already and how can we actually maximize their return on that going forwards over the next few years? Because if you look at, we've got what, 60 or 70 grand's worth of equipment sitting on just the coffee bar. So I want to get a return on that over the next 3 years because we try to turn things over after 3 years. So I need to get that return on that. I just don't want to bin it and then trying to start with something else that is unproven. We already know that all that coffee equipment is excellent. And it's producing great coffee now, but how can we actually make it more efficient? And how can we actually focus on the hospitality side of hospitality? We want to have a great experience for the customer every single time they come in because they know they're going to get a super consistent product.
And speed is, it's a foundation of that, really. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be smiles and atmosphere, but if the speed's not there.
If they're waiting 20 minutes, if they're waiting 20 minutes, doesn't matter how much you smile at them.
That's right. They'll just growl back.
Yeah, particularly when they're driving between Sydney and Melbourne and they've got three cranky kids in the car. They just want a coffee and want to keep going.
So what's the sales pitch to for, they come to the counter, they order and then the barista's doing the coffee. Do you have scripts for, add-on sales for waters or drinks?
Not really.
Or anything like that?
No, not really.
Know what they want.
Yeah, generally people are knowing what they want. Obviously the fries and stuff like that. We asked if they were getting a burger, something like that. But one of the things I think to help improve that spend is actually speed, and particularly coffee speed, because like we do a reasonable amount of dine-in. So if we can actually get their coffee out to them reasonably quickly, and they might be getting their Big Brekkie or their Avo and Feta Smash with a couple of poached eggs, whatever that might be. Well, that's a good one. Poached eggs on Avo and Feta Smash is always an upsell that we try to get. But if we can get the coffee out to them initially quite quickly, and then their meal comes out, you know, in that 7 to 10 to 12 minutes in that sort of range, then we're comfortable with that for the meal. Chances are they finish that coffee. And if the coffee was good, there's another coffee order coming in. And that's where the whole table ordering comes into play as well. Yeah. If there's a bit of a lineup or things like that. But, you know,
are you taking orders at the table or are they coming back?
No. So we don't do in-person table ordering, but we do have the option for ordering from the table via QR code.
And do you have the option? Do you track? You're tracking kind of barista productivity. What about sort of all those things around speed? How do you track that? Do you crunch the numbers from your what sort of point of sale do you use, by the way?
Yeah, so we've got Lightspeed by counter, and then we're using the Bumpit add-on there. So we're a completely paperless cafe. I don't want any paper in the cafe. Paper gets lost. And
screens in the kitchen.
Screens everywhere. Yeah, screens everywhere. We have pass screens and all the rest. So, you know, and the staff are trained to look at the screens, understand, and particularly front of house staff, we're wanting them to be looking ahead, ahead what's coming out, you know what's going where, so that helps the baristas be faster, because if the baristas, if the front of house person is picking it up going, these are going to table 3 and I've got 2 flat whites, and the barista just goes, yes, the baristas onto the next order straight away. So that helps as well. Same with the kitchen staff as well in the past, that they're able to, you know, oh, I've got 2.
So did you find the kitchen staff picked up the screen thing pretty quickly? Was there any resistance?
We had it from the get-go. Right. We had it from the get-go.
If you work here, that's what we do.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, there's no choice. It needs to be that way. That way that, you know, things aren't getting lost. We're not running out of paper.
What sort of interesting workflow things have you pulled out of the data from having bump screens and things like that? Anything that you've managed to, you know, like bottlenecks or anything like that you've managed to pinpoint?
Yeah. Like particularly on weekends where we might get a lot of dine-ins and we'd sometimes get banked up with front of house. So we were doing juices on demand. We've stopped doing that now. We actually juice first thing in the morning.
Okay.
And so we do 4 pre-prepared juices. We use a slightly smaller bottle, but once there's a little bit of ice in the glass, it looks, you know, it's quite full. And we've actually been able to get a better return on the investment there because there's less juice, less waste, and we're actually getting, you know, more money for the product.
There's less.
Sorry, what was that?
You just say about the juicing, you know.
With the juicing, yeah, we're getting a better return on the investment because we're batching the juicing through.
Right.
So we've got 4 juices in the cabinet ready to go, pre-bottled.
What type of juicer do you use?
We've just got a slow. What do they call it? One of the slow juicers.
Yeah, they're quite not popular, aren't they?
Yeah,
they've got a whole. They really kind of push the the pre-batching seems to work really well.
And that's allowed us to do it at our times where we're perhaps a little bit quieter, which means that our speed of service is better during those peak times.
How do you get people off the highway, off the freeway into town? Because it's not – people just usually want to – they know there's going to be a big service station centre with terrible coffee coming up.
We have heaps of those. Yeah. So, like, within let's call it – a 50-kilometer range of us, there's probably 5 or 6 different service centres that people could stop at. But we're chasing that market that they want something a little bit better. They're not necessarily wanting a Macca's coffee. They're wanting to get off the highway. So we do that via our big billboards that we've put in. We've got 3 big billboards on the Hume Highway. We put in a fairly bold claim on it saying it has the best coffee between Sydney and Melbourne, just with our logo. And interestingly, so the very first day that we put it in, which was not long after we opened in Gundagai, it basically doubled our sales overnight.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really significant. Yeah. It just went from – the business went from being, oh, what have I done opening here to, oh, this is going to do all right.
This is so. Nice.
Yeah.
Very rare to see – I mean, you see Macca's and – QSRs with billboards, but it's very rare to see signs for independent operators.
And interestingly enough, since we've had the success that we've had there with that particular billboard, I've noticed a number of other cafes have actually gone and put that in, like the Gundagai Bakery now has one. Yeah. And one of the real telltale signs of the effect, not only just for us, but also for the town itself, is that the visitor information center, their visitors is like their numbers are on the way up. Most visitor information centers are steadily declining, but we're seeing a resurgence in the town.
Food and coffee led recovery.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Nice. And not only that, like there's a couple of other good operators in town as well in that accommodation provider too. Yeah, and we've got like, we've actually got Three Blue Ducks only 20 minutes away from Gundagai, which it, in country terms is basically next door for 20 minutes. Yeah. So, you know, it really, you know, we've got a few, some things happening in the region, which is, you know, just helping to develop the tourism. So,
because everyone talks about our regional food and regional this, but people often have a bit of a sinking feeling, say, you know, I wish, but sometimes it's a bit hard to find.
And look, and it is. And that's where we're seeing people who are coming home, like similar stories to my wife and I, where we've, you know, we've moved out of the city, we've come home, we've brought a little bit, as people say, we've brought a little bit of Sydney to Tumut or to Gundagai. And, you know, we've really been able to have that impact on people's expectations as well. And there's nothing better than someone who stopped for a coffee in Gundagai with very low expectations. And that's probably been warranted over the years to get an amazing single origin espresso and baristas who know what they're doing and who are passionate about providing an excellent experience for that individual.
So what about social media and Google listings and all those things? So that you feel they have an impact on getting people in the door as well?
Yeah, 100%.
And what works?
Yeah, so we're melding those billboards with Google proximity ads. So if you see one of our billboards and you search for us, then you'll get an ad come up. Mm-hmm. And it's saying Coffee Peddler, open 7 days per week. Great, excellent coffee, great food, get directions. And it's all about getting people to the front door. So it's get directions. We're trying to get people to the front door. And so we're using that. We then make sure that our Google listing's always up to date with our opening hours, whether that be public holidays or, you know, we only close 2 days a weekend, 2 days a year, which is Christmas and Boxing Day. We're open every other day of the year, including like all of Easter and things like that. And then our social side of things, we're not maybe as on top of that as what we should be. You know, it's just fits and starts at the moment, but really need to get better at doing that because I think that.
Well, that's Google's the number one listing now. If you're giving lots of time to that, that's pretty effective.
We do. And I also do a few updates on Google and things like that too. So hopefully that helps on that side of things.
Right. Something that I wish a lot more people would do. They kind of do the listing and then there's no new photos or no new. Or anything like that.
It's
like a blog if you use it. Properly.
Well, interestingly, Ken, across both of our sites, we've actually had about 1,000 reviews now, including like Google reviews and TripAdvisor reviews. Mm-hmm. So they're the two ones that we sort of we concentrate on the most. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's quite a significant number of reviews. And that's an indicator of how we're traveling as a business as well, like the recent reviews and they're things that we bring up with our managers. You know, because we have an operations manager and then we have store managers and then we've got a head barista as well and things like that. So we bring up with them, you know, any issues and also good ones as well. Mm. You know, and like had a great example the other day, one of the juniors came up to me and said, oh, that person said that was the best big breakfast they've ever had. I'm like, don't tell me, go and tell the chef. You know, like give the feedback to the person that really deserves the feedback, you know. And so if someone's getting good feedback, like, you know, definitely tell them. And that's like at the end of a busy service, if everything's run really smoothly and it's felt easy, you know, we congratulate the staff. Nice. You know,
so tell us a bit more about your team. You've got 30 odd people now. That's a lot of people. I presume you still know everyone's name.
I make a point of whenever, like whenever you come into work, I want to love going to work. I want them to love going to work. Yeah. It's good morning, you know, see you later. How's your weekend? You know, that we encourage that. It's a friendly place to work. And we do have, you know, new staff members who come in and say, it's nice to work, you know, and, and also like it's going here, pleases and thank yous. All those things, sort of things, and, you know, which can get difficult when it's, you know, when service is really pumping. Sometimes you know, you can get a little bit stressed and all the rest, but the pleases and thank yous go a long way.
Mm. What are your systems you use for rostering and induction and, you know, on training and all those sorts of things?
Yeah, for rostering, we're using ZenShifts at the moment, but I think we're looking to move to deputy. It's one of the things we've flagged that we need to get a better correlation between our rostering software and also our point of sale. We want to sort of get that more tied in, better links in through to our accounting software as well.
Okay. And what about induction and sort of initial training and ongoing?
Yeah, that's probably
systems, or do you have paper-based or
yeah, just coaching? Paper-based at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's probably something that we're actually, yeah, with the growth of the business, it's probably something that we're probably not as strong on. And we need to get that stronger in each of the individual areas. The actual training of the, you know, how we're wanting things done is very strong, but we could actually become more systemized on the way that that's approached.
Well, nice problem to have. And with your financial management, everything's on your phone when you need it, or what's how has that developed?
Well, because I love, I'm into data. Yeah, love numbers. So definitely looking at everything on my phone. I can see all ordering in both cafes, like, you know, what's the speed of the cafes, how busy they are, you know, all those sorts of things from my phone, as well as, you know, to the minute sales data where we're tracking, then comparing that to like expected wage costs for the week, you know, be able to look at all that sort of stuff, no matter where I am.
Is there enough similarities between the two stores to benchmark them on anything and have a bit of competition going there, or are they two different?
Yeah, that can be. Yeah, it's interesting. I guess we and because people are going across between the stores, it's maybe a little bit more difficult to do that. But at the same token, yeah, I look at the group as a whole more. I guess they're sort of more focused on their own individual patch. But yeah, I understand that some weeks are going to be better on the numbers than others, and you've got to sometimes ride out that. I think there was actually a podcast that you did with someone that was in fast food service industry, and it was about, you know, schedule for the average, don't schedule for the outliers.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And so that was one of the real key things, you know, ensuring that that those staff members who might make decisions a little more emotively than myself, to go, because they'll go, we got smashed last Sunday, yeah, we've got to have more staff on next Sunday. Right. I'm like, no.
Immediately.
No, we don't. Yes. Like, this is what we expect. Yeah. This is the amount of staff that we need. And okay, sometimes you might be busier, but next weekend you might be slower
actually,
as well.
I think, I'm thinking back, Colin Harmon, you know, the famous barista and cafe owner in Dublin, of all places. I saw him when he came out to Sydney a few years ago, and I interviewed him, and that was a thing too. He would have, you know, you had to have your per head sales, your staff per head sales. It had to get to a certain step before
you add more.
Before you added anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But explaining that to people, they would. Numbers, or they can get better even if they don't love it.
Yeah. And I guess that, like, for us, you know, because we're also have a production kitchen as well, you know, we're having to allow for that. But one of the real key things for us here in the country is that we can run a little bit higher wage percentage. Are you there, Ken? Are you there? You there again?
Yep. So
one of the things in the country is that we can actually run a little higher wage percentage because our rent is considerably lower than the city. Like, you know, we're running a lot, lot lower.
What are your thoughts on staff shortages and no one wants to work anymore and all those kind of things? Are you feeling the pressure of that, or have you?
Yeah, 100%. Like, we're probably got three full-time positions not filled at the moment. Puts pressure on the existing staff to step up and keep going. And there's no, if someone's sick, that's going to cause us an issue. We've got no real fallback position at the moment. But, you know, longer term, I think that that's where we have to see the automation come into things. And the whole thing with it is also getting those existing staff to go, hey, this is the new direction for hospitality, you know, and I want you to come on that journey with me, you know, and how can we create better businesses that, you know, are more sustainable?
You just place to work, haven't you? And I always think about, you know, what's the best place in town to work? And sounds like you've got one of those.
And I guess that's, yeah. And certainly that has helped us with staff recruitment previously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in our region at the moment, we've got the Snowy 2.0 project is really ramping up. So that's a bit of a vacuum out of our local labor pool. So now we're seeing that, you know, they're advertising locally for hospitality workers. You know, it's not like I've been up there on site. It's not the greatest of working conditions to be at a, you know, a remote location, basically like what you'd see. You know, you could be up in the Snowies or you could be out in the Pilbara. Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't matter where it is because you're not allowed off site. You're not allowed to go walking up in the mountains. If it's snowing or whatever, bad luck. You're not allowed to like go on out and play snow, you know, make snow angels and things like that. You know, it's still a difficult area to be working
in.
The money is good. And that's obviously a competition for us now.
Sure.
So how can we longer term create a business that is not as labor focused and that we can actually, you know, create a more sustainable business? Because we do see, you know, plenty of hospitality businesses ultimately go out of business because not because they were lacking in sales as well, that they were not able to, you know, control their cost centers.
Yeah. And to be able to really kind of, whether it's staff up or equip up those peak times when you can just make a screaming amount of money. You've got to be ready to do that. Yeah,
100%.
Matt, tell us about your local connections. You're kind of fairly community. How does that feed, make your business stronger? Or is it just personal passion or, you know, what's the connection between that and business success?
Yeah, I guess that. So I'm involved with two organizations fairly heavily. The first one, vice president of our local Chamber of Commerce. And with that, you know, obviously we face the fires, the Black Summer bushfires. We've been really badly economically disadvantaged because of those.
Not quite 2 years ago, isn't it? Pre-COVID.
Yeah. So it started for us, I think it was 26th of December. Is when the fire started for us, and they lasted for 58 days.
Wow.
So yeah. And so forestry is a massive one that's been affected by that. So there's going to be, they've predicted there'll be $800 million per annum lost out of our local economy for the next 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so if you put that into perspective with say Kangaroo Island, where they had about $1 billion loss in their tourism in 1 year, but they're back at their peak, what they had previously.
Right.
Okay. So they you know, they bounce back. Maybe there's some lagging stuff with some of the stuff that was burnt and all the rest, but you know, like in the Blue Mountains, they may have suffered from a few weeks of lack of tourism, but we're going to suffer for 25 years because, you know, softwood pine takes 25 to 30 years to rebuild. So
how do you counter cyclical for that then?
Yeah. So now what we've got to do, like if we look at tourism, which only represents 4% of our local economy here in the Snowy Valleys local government area. So we're actually actively trying to promote the development of, you know, different tourism infrastructure, primarily cycling infrastructure here, as well as adventure tourism, trying to, you know, improve that. We unfortunately have missed out on $4.3 billion from the sale of Snowy Hydro, that we didn't receive a dollar of that's gone to Jindabyne, which, you know, they're on the other side of the Snowies, and that was Barilaro's electorate. So right. They obviously got a fairly good swag of that. And then a whole heap of others gone into inland rail and also special activation precinct in Wagga. Mm. But the Snowy Valleys itself didn't actually receive anything of that, even though 95% of the electricity generation assets of Snowy Hydro are located in our LGA. So these are the things
politics, that because
I actually chose not to stand for the local government elections that are about to happen on the 4th of December, but just simply because we've got too many opportunities with work, and I don't want to get a couple of years down the track and be disappointed that I haven't had the focus on the business that I.
Well, it sounds like deserves. Lobbying and going to meetings and being available to meet or nip down to Canberra and all those sort of things has worked pretty well for you. I mean, it's disappointing to miss out on a large chunk of change like that. But
yeah, look, we're not and we're not dead in the water yet. Like we've still got a lot of fight in us, and we understand that some of these things do take time to develop. You know, but we're actively trying to improve the amenity of the local region. We want to be able to diversify the risk because one in two jobs is forestry based. You know, as a result, and I guess coming back to your early question, how does this actually benefit my business? It creates a stronger local economy, and if people aren't going to put their hand up and fight for the local area, it's going to continue to be, you know, an area that is subject to the risk of another large bushfire going through. And when 50% of your jobs are forestry based and 40% of your forest got burnt 2 years ago, the chances of that happening again in the next 25 to 30 years, given the climate change that we're facing, is very high.
Very high, yeah. Yeah.
It's very high.
And you're also creating local jobs for kids who finish school who don't have to go to Sydney or Canberra to get a job. You know, there's
100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is the whole thing. It's providing options for people. They don't have to move out. You know, one of the things that I'm really proud of that we did here locally was we approached Harvey Norman, the local chamber approached Harvey Norman, asked them to open up a pop-up shop, a pop-up store here in Tumut. You know, a town of only 6,500 people, and they weren't that keen on it because it's such a small area. But we actually draw from a much larger area. And as a result, it's now permanent. We had a big empty shop right in the middle of the main street, and we lined it all up for them. They did a pop-up. They said they'd do it for 3 months. It was that successful, and they signed a long-term lease.
Awesome.
And we've now had, like, you know, eight full-time positions has been developed because of that store going in.
Nice.
And what it means, though, Ken, is that people aren't driving 100 kilometres to Wagga to buy an electrical product. They can do that here locally. It's keeping more people here locally.
Yeah.
They're more likely to spend. And interestingly, the little homeware store that's right next door to Harvey Norman that also sells some electrical stuff, they had a bump up in sales.
They're going nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Because, because more people.
And the campaigns either side of them too.
Exactly.
Nice. So tell me, I mean, I was always involved with Chambers of Commerce. I'm a bit of a fan, but they are a very mixed bunch, aren't they? I mean, and a lot of, seems like a lot of hospo operators, you know, by the end of a long day, it's just like the last thing you want to do is, say, go to a meeting or something like that. But you've got a Chamber of Commerce, sounds pretty dynamic. What makes a Chamber of Commerce work well?
I think it's just people who are passionate about the region. People, and also, I guess, a lot of the people that are on the Chamber as well have done the move away and then come back again. And they recognize how special the region is itself.
So there's an extra kind of passion for the area.
Like these people that have moved away or have moved here from other areas and recognize how amazing the region is and the opportunities that are available if we get people who are prepared to drive it in the right direction.
Nice. What's a sort of typical month-by-month activities that your chamber does?
So at the moment we're trying to attract grant funding to be able to put together what we're calling Adventure Snowy Valley's website, which is a searchable website. That will then also – like we're obviously trying to encourage people to come and do, like, you know, different bushwalks and things like that they might not know about because at the moment the information is really fragmented. So you might get a little bit from parks, you might get a little bit from the local council, there might be, you know, from the local bike store or we've got a really good outdoor clothing guy here locally. And so you might get a little bit from them but you haven't got a central depository of all this information, and we're wanting to bring that all together because, like, even National Parks,
Google loves those sites, especially if they're well optimized.
You know, really trying to bring that together, but then it's linking the local businesses to those activities. Yeah. So if somebody goes to Talbingo, say, and they do the foreshore mountain bike, what can they do after?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Okay.
You know, and that's where
we've got great pizza nearby.
100%. You know, like who knew you could go snowshoeing in Australia? Yeah. You know, and I've done it. I've done it here in our area. But no one knows that you can go doing it in our area.
Awesome. Yeah.
So these are the things that we need to and not being done and not successful because people don't know about it.
Yeah. Nice. And actually, I mean, I don't know the politics of the area and all of it. It's actually the kind of stuff that politicians do love to get behind when you, if you get the infrastructure going, like get the site up, you know, all those kind of developments and the SEO monthly and all those kind of things, which is, it's a bit tedious, but boy, it works if you do it right.
100%. And the other thing is that we have a really great relationship with the local council as well, not only the councillors, but also the council executive staff. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons why I also didn't want to go into the local government because at the moment, if I want to chat to any council staff, I just call them.
Yeah.
Okay. As a councillor, I have to go via the chain of command and I can't have that immediate impact.
You'd have to be kind of going up in, just to be elected, you have to be in opposition to someone as well.
Yeah. And look, and you know, my family, my parents and brother and sister, they were concerned. Sorry, I think it dropped out there. My family were concerned that, you know, going into local politics that may actually negatively impact my business. But then I guess that also comes back to the fact that I'm not actually front facing. I'm not customer facing anymore. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So just to wrap up, you got a lot on your plate, a lot of balls in the juggle, and you look pretty relaxed and you ride your bike a fair bit. How do you kind of handle everything and have this thing called work-life balance? And do you want more of it? Tell us about Matt's life.
Look, that was one of the reasons to not be on that mortgage merry-go-round, that, you know, the hamster wheel that I see many of my friends in Sydney, you know, they've got the sometimes multi-million dollar mortgages that they have to work and they have to do everything. And that's one of the things when we moved to the country, it meant that we were, you know, essentially debt-free coming home. And so one of the things with me, with the business, was how can I divest myself of my, you know, whereby if we've made a mistake, let's learn from it, try not to do it again in the future. If we're doing it over and over again, why is that? How can we actually get that?
Well, if they're
doing
it over and over again, that's your fault, not theirs.
That's 100%. Yeah. How am I failing as a business owner that is allowing this person to continue to make a poor decision? And that's me totally. So therefore, you know, and so that's when you've got to work backwards and sort of understand that. But that's one of the things, like, you know, being able to do that, because, like, I want to be able to, you know, if it's been a great snow day, I want to duck over and go skiing with my son, because my son's at school in Jindabyne. So he's a avid snowboarder. He does about 30 days a year snowboarding. Right. So I want to be able to duck over there when the sun's shining and I want to be able to do that.
That's the plan. That's what business is about, is to have a better life, not just to be kind of busy.
No, not to work, yeah. And look, I guess that's I was sort of before the podcast, I was sort of thinking, well, what are some of the things that people are doing in hospitality and why are they not achieving that yet? Mm. And I think that a lot of the time because they don't divest themselves of the some of their daily responsibilities and they're not putting those things in place, they're actually standing in the road of the business growth.
Yeah.
And like for me, it's like, get out of the road. Let these people who are good at what they're doing, let them do what they're good
at. Just out of interest, what's a couple of things in the last, say, 6 months or so that you've actually handed over or no longer do like that? There might be small things.
Training of baristas.
Okay.
I don't train the baristas anymore. Yeah. That's the head barista's responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ordering of all coffee, pretty much out of that now. What else? Yeah, I pretty much have tried to. Yeah, if I come into the cafes and I see there's an issue, I can't talk to the staff member. I have to go directly to the store manager or to the operations manager. Yeah, I'm not going to go in there and discipline people.
Yeah,
that's not my role. Mm. It's that's the you have to respect that chain of command. Yeah. So I'll go to the operations manager.
A bit of a rarity in small business land.
Look, and it annoys me. Like, don't get me wrong. I walk in there and sometimes I want to blow my top because I'm really upset about something. Yeah. But at the same time, if I don't allow that store manager to rectify that issue, then they're going to resent me coming in, and they're also going to feel that they also don't have my faith in them as well. And you know, one of the great things that I try to do is if I get like either a staff member or particularly the managers come up to me like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, oh, we've got this problem. Well, what are your solutions? What do you think needs to be done to fix it? You know, this is, and so then we'll decide together which way to do it. And then I'll go, okay, now you go back and you call that tradesperson or you get that done. Yeah, it's
and they're
not me.
Probably getting into the habit now that don't come to Matt with a problem. You've got to have a solution as well. Otherwise,
pretty much. Yeah. And like, why are you ringing me about a blocked toilet?
Yeah.
You know, call the plumber because we're just adding one extra phone call into the process because I got to ring the plumber.
Yeah.
You can ring the plumber.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, it doesn't need to be me in that.
You know what type of coffee he has.
100%. Yeah. And all the tradies love coming to work for us because we give them free coffee or free food whenever they come around. You know, we look after them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a bit of a treat when they do come around and have a good relationship. Yeah. The other one is, making sure that the staff respect the suppliers as well.
Okay.
Yeah, making sure like so that
because they're in short supply too. I mean, the delivery companies can't get drivers off.
Regardless of whether it's a tradesperson or it's it's your fruit and veg guy or it's your coffee guy. If you don't need to lean on them for a favor, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get by without ringing that person up, going, "Oh my God, I'm in a crisis."
Yeah.
Or can we maybe just today just duck around to Woolies to pick something up to get us through instead of make that person drive their driver back, right? Because that supplier is wanting to maintain the relationship because, you know,
and you stuffed up your ordering.
Because we stuffed up. You can't do that. Yeah. You've got to respect the milko, you've got to respect the bread supplier, all those people. You've got to respect what their time and value that as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great talking to you, Matt. Really, really enjoyed this.
No worries, Ken.
Thank you. Okay. Now, where do people find you if they want to check your website or connect with you personally?
Look, if they're wanting to connect personally, just Matthew Lucas on LinkedIn. It's probably the best spot. Also on Twitter, Matt P. Lucas, and then peddler.coffee. is our website, although that's about to be redone because it's not where it needs to be. pedaler.coffee. Pedaler. Okay. Yeah. As in pedaling bikes.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Right. All good.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.